Hey, everybody, welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest based comedians who are just trying to figure it out, man. Just
That's
trying
it.
to, yeah.
That's it.
Just
That's all we're
try.
trying to do.
That's all we're trying to do is have a little fun, Sheryl Crow said, all I want to do is have some fun. And I don't
You're
know.
throwing monkey wrenches. Usually we come hard with a hip hop, but you're like, we're switching it up. It's been
I
2 weeks
know.
off, and now we're back on our Sheryl Crow shit.
There's been some changes in these last 2 weeks. I've changed up my playlist. Look, I'm just saying people like don't give Sheryl Crow enough credit for being a fucking OG, for being a real gangster. All right.
I
You
know.
know,
Yeah.
she's not, you know, she's day drinking, watching all the suckers wash their cars and their suits and, business skirts.
That
Is
is
she about
the
that life? She about that life,
She's
dog.
about that life. Sheryl Crow is? All right.
Yeah.
We're taking the podcast in a new direction. We are now in Sheryl Crow stands. You say anything negative about Sheryl Crow, that's your ass.
Exactly. Yep. That's our new catchphrase. You say anything about Sheryl Crow, that's your ass.
So what's up? It's been a couple weeks. We are back. I hope you guys missed us. We had a slower start to the month of July, I know, comedy wise for both of us. Also dealing with the holiday and some personal stuff. So took a couple weeks off. So it's nice to be back and see that face of my co-host, Madelano Martin.
Likewise, nice to see you as well, Dwight Simmons. We can. I don't mind talking about like the personal stuff a little bit, just to kind of fill people in on what's been
Please.
happening, because it's not just the stuff. I have a family member who had a pretty serious medical emergency, and so I've been helping out with that, and will be for the foreseeable future. But I did want to talk about, before we get into comedy stuff, the thing that I kept hinting at, and we kept saying, well, we can't talk about it yet. So I applied to become the new executive director for Buskirk Cholmondeley Theater, which is a performance venue here in Bloomington, Indiana. For people that don't know, it's like a 600 seat theater, and I made it really far in the process. But ultimately, I was not selected for that position. So that's the thing we kept talking about. Like, we can't really talk about it yet because I was still interviewing. When I got that email letting me know that I didn't get the position, I of course went on Twitter and started talking some shit about that venue, because that's what we do as adults, as regular, normal human beings. That's what I've learned from comedy, is when you don't get something that you applied for, you go to social media and you talk shit immediately,
It was crazy. He was on Twitter, he was on Facebook, he's on Threads, he was on Threads Lite. This was a bummer, at least to hear, because this started before Limestone. I remember your first interview that you had to do, or part of the process, was the day before Limestone started, where you had no stress at all going on in your life. But it was weird to me because you had to film actual questions like you were self-taping for a commercial.
It was the first time that I've ever heard of this. Obviously, I've not tried to get an actual job in, 15 years or whatever. So the whole thing was like a learning process again. Like, I literally had to Google, like, what do resumes look like nowadays? What does a cover letter look like now? Because it, been over a decade since I did any of that. But yeah, part of it was I had to answer four questions remotely, to just self-taped, essentially, that it was done through a web portal. So I didn't even know what the questions were. The questions would come up on the screen, and then there would be a countdown, and I had 30 seconds to think of my answer, and then the camera would go live, and then I would give my answers until I was done, and then I'd hit next, and the next, and then the same thing would happen. The next question would pop up, and I'd give me 30 seconds to think. And so, yeah, I was doing that at midnight on the day before Limestone, after I'd already been doing pre-production stuff, like 2 18-hour days, essentially doing pre-production going into the festival. So,
That was why I've never heard of that. But are you regretting not taking those improv classes?
I know that we're supposed to like always have beef with improv as stand-ups, but I thought about taking improv classes off and on over the years just to be a little bit sharper and quicker in the moment on stage. No, I think I mean, obviously I did okay on those questions because I made it much farther in the process. That was like literally like the second round or whatever. So I made it to the fourth round before I didn't make it. But it has been an interesting thing, and I tried to temper this with myself. I was thinking this is the kind of job I would love to do in a couple of years. I feel like I had a couple more years of doing the road in me, but you know, when opportunity is there, you got to go for it, you know. But I was telling myself, I was like, I may not get this. Don't be done with stand up in your mind yet. Like, don't be already like, well, I can just start leaving all these Facebook groups now. I don't need to be part of this bullshit anymore, you know. But it's even though I told myself not to do that, it did kind of seep in a little bit because it's been very hard for me to like and get motivated again to like send out avails and work on jokes and stuff because there was definitely part of me that thought I had moved away, I had stepped away from that, you know. And it reminded me of something that I remember someone telling me very early in comedy, which is like if you're thinking about quitting, you've already quit, right? And so like comics that are always like back and forth about, I don't know if I'm going to keep doing it or whatever, they're really robbing themselves of their potential and also in the enjoyment of the experience of being in the moment and still liking it. And so I've been happening to, you know, like, well, apparently this is my only skill set, so I guess I should keep doing it and kind of restart those motivational engines in me to, you know, send out avails and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah,
Also,
that's what
like,
I was going to.
that's especially hard to do because you are making it so far in the process. This was a process that lasted a month or even longer. Like, that's a long time. That's
Yeah,
a
it lasted
long
about
time.
6 weeks. It was about 6 weeks that from when I first applied to getting the rejection, the sweet RJ that I got.
The rejection letter, the caring rejection letter. It's hard because it's like you start, you're like, ooh, what's a salary like? And you're like, what's my life with a salary? Start spending that money in your head. And you're like, man, I'm gonna upgrade my insurance. I'm gonna do all
I'm gonna
these life
have
updates.
insurance.
I'm gonna have insurance.
Like it really was one of those things where, first of all, I just think the job would be cool because it's, you know, you're still working and booking cool things and, you know, being part of the community, which is why I did it. But the salary would have been nice. It isn't crazy high. I will say that it wasn't like a crazy high number, but you know, it was more than I make doing comedy. And also it did come with benefits. So it's one of those things where like if Denise wanted to transition jobs, we would be covered while she was figuring it out from one job to the next. Not saying that she wants to do that, but it's not just on her to provide her insurance, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense, man.
Yeah,
So
but you know,
where
none of that came to be, so it doesn't matter.
So, full disclosure for our listeners, if you got this position, what would your comedy career look like? Like, are
If I
you
would have,
easing out of it or?
yeah, if I would have gotten it, because I mean, you know, to run a venue, you got to be there. You can't be away all the time. And so my plan was to still do some stuff locally occasionally and maybe even regionally once I figured out what the timing was. They did ask me if I would step down from Limestone. And I said no, because I was like, I have two other co-directors. It's 10 years in. To a certain extent, it runs itself. We use that phrasing. It's not true, but you know, it's easier now. The processes are there. It takes less hours and manpower, you know, up until like the month of. And so I do wonder if that's maybe why one of the things that cost me the gig is they thought it would be too demanding to try to do two different things like that.
Interesting.
Or yeah, so I don't know. But you know, maybe there's someone just more, you know, better qualified than I was, you know, for it. So we'll see. I am interested to see who they hire.
Oh, you guys think social media was firing when he got the rejection letter. Wait until he finds out who got the job. You
Oh,
want
maybe they found
comic
something.
spite. Just somebody that took your spot. Oh.
Oh, this motherfucker! This
You're fucking with voodoo dolls and
motherfucker! No. The thing with social media, though, I did not lock down my social media. I thought about it as like, oh, are they going to go back and find some kind of tweet or something, and that's going to take me out of the running? And I had the thought. I was like, should I set all my stuff to private while I'm going through this process? Which is something that a lot of people will do, and honestly, is a very smart idea. But I was just kind of like, no, you know, and I'm not a super edge lord or anything on social media anyway. So I was like, no, I'm just gonna be me, and if they want me, cool. If not, then they don't. And anyway, so now I'm going back to doing some, you know, $200 no hotel gigs, you know.
Hell yeah, man. Speaking of which, I did Saugatuck on July 1st. I did. That was exactly the deal. $200, no hotel. I would usually connect it to something else in Michigan to make the weekend. It's a Saturday show, but with the holiday, it just didn't feel like anything would come together. I put out some feelers and then nothing really materialized, but the show was absolutely packed. It's Sagatuck in the summer. Like they're moving in extra tables. Cause have you done the upstairs room or just the downstairs?
I've only ever done the downstairs room.
Okay. The upstairs it's pretty huge as well. there's like a, there was like the wildfires happening in Canada. So like the sky is just like smog and people are still outside, like smoking on the patio. And like, I'm like, this place is something else. Anyway, there's live music outside where the show is inside.
How much bleed through was there from the live music into your room?
Honestly, not that much until almost done with my set.
Mm-hmm.
Like not that much. But this venue just does like live music from like 4 to 8, comedy show at 8, karaoke at 10. It's just like a all day party venue. And so I get the people that have been day drinking all day. Also, their AC broke and it was like 92 degrees. And we got like 120 people in there. And they're trying. They're doing their best, but everybody's sweating their ass off. I get like 25 minutes on stage and I'm just like drenched. Yeah. I'm like taking cocktail napkins.
You got that Phil Pointer energy at that point.
I know. I'm a towel comic now, given this experience. I'm a towel comic now. I did sell some merch. I got some new pint glasses that aren't that great. I thought the design would be much better, but so.
What could you have one? Can you show it to me?
I don't have one up here.
Okay.
It just says in black lettering, Karens call me master. So, which is great. I'm going to have to do another run of something that actually looks good. But I got I got some koozies that say, who's the master? It has my special artwork on there. So
that's awesome.
That Laura Sanders did. So sold some merch and then drove home amidst fireworks. And that drive from Sagatuck to Indy can get real dicey. I had to stop to get gas and it was like 11:30. So I got off on this random exit, almost hit a deer. That was fun.
Getting the full experience. Yeah.
That would have detonated my Prius, man.
Yeah.
That would have, like, it ran in front of me. And if it wasn't like 30 mile per hour speed limit, I probably would have just smoked this thing and it would have been the Matt Just Might podcast.
Brent Terhune hit a deer with his Prius going like highway speeds and he survived. So yeah,
his is like, I got like the smallest.
Oh, you got the tiny one.
Yeah, I got the tiny, tiny one.
Yeah, no, you would have just flipped end over end.
Yeah.
not just you, the whole car. The whole car would have just done that, you know.
Obliterated, man.
Yeah.
But then I tried to get gas at this gas station and out of this middle of fucking nowhere town, and the gas station was closed. So I put my credit card in the reader and it wouldn't pump. It wouldn't pump gas.
No.
It took my credit card and then said 1 cent. And then I'm like on E.
Oh.
In the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah, you gotta plan ahead, man.
I know.
That's the thing. This is your one time, like for 6 months now. 6 months going forward, you will not make this mistake again. Your gas will get down to like half a tank. You're like, I'm getting some gas.
Yeah. It's funny because I don't have to fill it up that much, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know what the hell I was thinking.
Because I've done this. The pumps aren't working.
The pumps are not working. And so I had to look up another gas station that's like 3 miles away. And I like coast into this Sitgo. It's like four pump Sitgo that's actually open, able to get some gas and make it home driving along the fireworks of 4th of July. It was actually pretty cool. Yeah.
Well, Sagatuck is also where it's located. It is kind of like weirdly in the middle of nowhere. And I'm trying to think if there's a gas station right at the Sagatuck exit. I don't think there is.
Not.
Like, once you kind of get remotely close to Sagatuck, there's nothing there but like little resort shit. And none of it is usable. Like, there's nothing like practical. There's not a fucking CVS there. There's nothing like, and if you actually needed anything, you're out of luck.
Yeah. You know? If you want an ice cream shop, there's several of those. They got pizza parlors and they got knickknacks.
Yeah, there you go. And they got karaoke after the comedy. There you go.
Welcome to Saga Tup. Did you do anything that week?
Let's see. So I've been dealing with family medical stuff since June 23rd. I did come back up to Bloomington. I've not done comedy in forever. Let's see. So yeah, I mean, the 4th of July, I went to my mother-in-law's and chilled. You know, she's got a swimming pool, so just kind of grilled out and hung out, and it was pretty great.
Sorry for interrupting your 4th of July with a phone call. It was very... Matt. I never called Matt. I called Matt on the 4th of July. It was Tuesday, and he was like, "We're not podcasting today. It's a holiday." I was like, "I just wanted to see how you're doing. I'm sorry. I'm going to go... eat my Michigan edibles I got from Saga Tuck now."
You weren't interrupting. I answered in a funny way. Come on.
He answered. He yelled at me to turn the damn music down. I said, "This is bullshit."
Yeah. If it ain't Shale Crow, you got to go. That's what I said.
I chilled as well the 4th of July. We didn't do much. I bought Megan this Harry Potter game that she's obsessed with.
I saw a tweet about this, I think.
God, she's playing it nonstop. I'm concerned. I might need to talk to somebody. But I moved a TV outside in our backyard, and then I was grilling, and she was playing playing Hogwarts in the backyard. It was a good day.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Children. Now, I think you need to check in on her, you know, because video game addiction is real. And also, particularly
is Harry Potter addiction. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was going to say with that particular game, you just need to every so often just quiz her like how she feels about trans people's rights. And then if she starts getting a little turfy, then you're like, "We got to turn off the game for a little bit, baby." Like, you're getting a little JK on me. You got to turn it off, you know?
I think what I've seen in the game is them overcompensating for JK Rowling, because there are
every character is trans.
There's so many just ambiguous characters. They're like, "I don't know what gender I am." Yeah, it's hilarious. Yeah. We got a game coming out, so JK won't shut the fuck up.
But yeah, like they had to do some new voice acting, like bring in some overdubs, you know? This new script has been written by the legal department, and
Oh man, it's funny. Man. I did. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say I did go see a comedy show while I was down in Louisville with my family stuff. I did take an evening to go see Billy Wayne Davis at Planet of the Tapes. I love Billy Wayne. He's super fun. It's great to see him and hang out, and he just murdered. He's such an effortlessly he's one of those comics that's so relaxed and in the cut and just laid back the entire time. Like it's impressive. It's really, really impressive. And he's like that in real life. It's not a character that he's doing. It's amplified a little bit, but it's just like, man, it makes me feel like a spaz. I'm just like, "Hey, I got a joke I'm gonna tell you. Let me tell you this joke." You know, like watching Billy Mann, I'm like, "Oh, I could calm the fuck down a little bit." Yeah. You know, like the jokes are good.
We're up there burning calories, dude.
Yeah, exactly. You could put Billy in that 92 degree room. He wouldn't have broken a sweat.
I know.
It's a cucumber.
Envious. I did Cam's show Can Can on July 5th. It was great. I had been working on some new stuff that I got to say out loud. I did the new stuff in Saga Tuck, but it was hard to read how anything went in that room. It's kind of like energy whack-a-mole where all right, let's do a joke that I know has killed here before. And they're just like, "Yeah." And then like some random new bit or some riff or some tag that never works gets like an applause break. It was weird as hell. So I left that with no real inclination on how the set went.
No accurate reading. Well, it's also when, you know, people are in a room that hot, the way they react is, you know, this, everyone gets sluggish.
Yeah.
You know, we had it with the Blockhouse the first night of Limestone, you know, their AC broke. And, you know, even like diehard comedy fans, like Tim Tucker was there, who's like a longtime supporter of the festival. And he even just like posted a thing about it and like messaged a couple of the comics directly. He's like, you were great. Yeah. You were just like, you were super funny, but everybody was just like struggling to stay awake because it was so warm in there, you know? So yeah. So it's good that you got a good second read on these jokes with the Can-Can show.
Yeah. He does a good job. Have you done that room for him?
I've not. I've asked to do it, and he's. I love Cam. He was very honest. He's just like, yeah. It's like I'm trying not to have a bunch of straight white dudes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Totally, I totally get it, man. I totally get it. Yeah. So
as Ryan Singer closed it out, who is the opposite of Billy Wayne Davis. Not in the cut. Not in, he is a manic psychopath the entire time, and it's delightful.
Mercurial. I think mercurial is the right way to describe Ryan. He's untethered to this worldly plane that you and I exist on. And he's reporting back. He's reporting back from the outer limits, you know, and he's hilarious the entire time.
He's been beamed up, but
yeah.
That was great, man. Like I've only since Saturday I was on a show at the Comedy Sports Theater. It got canceled because it's July and that's what happens a lot. Low ticket sales. So Cam asked me to do his beer brewery show. So I just went and did a spot on that in front of four people, I think, and some comics. So I was like, thankfully I still got a spot, but
yeah. And cost. It's in town. It was in town. So, you know, it's not, like just doing dropping in and getting a spot. I got to get my act together, literally, because I'm closing out the Attic contest Wednesday and Thursday. Wednesday, I don't have to do a ton of time because, you know, they don't really tally the votes. Thursday's the night when they have to tally both nights' votes and everything. So I have to actually do a fair amount of time. But yeah, I haven't even really been thinking about comedy. So I need to try to, I should say I've not been thinking about my own comedy that much. I did start teaching the class again in Carmel, which is another reason why I had to come back this week from Louisville. Last night was the first night of teaching the class. So I have been thinking about comedy and the larger framework of comedy and explaining it to people, but not necessarily my jokes and what I think about things, you know? So
take some time for yourself, baby.
Yeah. So tomorrow and maybe the rest of this afternoon, I'm going to have to like really sit down and kind of figure out what jokes I have. It's weird how just a couple of weeks away, you're like, I don't know. Like I was mowing the grass and I thought of one. I was like, oh yeah, that's a joke. And it wasn't like a joke I remembered from like 6 years ago. It was a joke I was doing every show like up to a month ago.
Right.
That was just gone when I tried to recall it. And then I was just like, oh, right. Yeah, no, there's that thing about, okay, yeah.
It's like That's so funny. It's like the guy that gets abducted by aliens for 5 days and wakes up in the exact same spot. He's got the full beard and he's lost 20 pounds. Like, what happened?
It is like that. Yeah. I will say also the comedy class that I teach in Carmel.
Average age.
The average age, probably the average age for this group is probably in their 40s.
Really?
So
a young bunch.
It's a younger bunch. There's a couple like older kind of bucket list type people, but I think they're all, there's maybe like two people that I think really like, oh, I'm thinking about possibly doing this for real. Everyone else is like, it seems like fun. And, you know, and like, you know, you go around and you meet everybody the first class. And a lot of them, like, I took an acting class here, you know, last month. Now I'm doing this. They're just doing, you know, doing it to do it. But for the first time ever, the first class, I usually ask everybody like, tell everybody your name, quick fun fact about yourself, why you took the class, and who's one of your favorite comics. Just like get a sense of like what people are into, right? And someone could not name a comic, but they just talked about how much they love watching comedy on TikTok.
Okay.
And on Reels, which is a valid thing. Like if they don't know stand, like they've like, I don't really know a stand up, but this is what I like. And I think it's funny. And so I wanted to take this class. And so it is this changing landscape. We're now seeing the returns of it where fans aren't even connecting that with stand-up comedy,
right?
You know, they're like, and so this person had never gone to a stand-up show and like they just saw the word comedy in the class description, I guess.
Just were like,
and they seem smart and delightful, and I'm sure they're gonna be fine at the class, but it was just like, it's the first time I've ever heard someone not name a person,
not know a single
Yeah.
Comic.
So they didn't even say like a specific funny, you know,
you can't TikTok even say like Richard Pryor or like George Carlin. Yeah. You could just throw something out.
I mean, let's think of like, but I mean, they didn't even name like a famous TikToker. Like, oh, I really love Kevin Thornton, or I really love Ben Brannard, you know, people that got famous through TikTok. They didn't even do that. It was just like, I like this app.
Yeah. I like this specific whatever the fuck this is.
Yeah. That so it was very interesting. Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why we all put our name in the reels or clips we do, because if you've done stand-up comedy live, people come to see you. They don't remember your name when they leave if they didn't know it going in. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's just like a human thing transferred online. It's very interesting to have someone, because when I think of people that watch stand-up on TikTok, I think that they watch it and put it down. But this person is so interested in it that they paid money to take a class about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Do you think, I don't know, do you think that's more advantageous than someone who's like a bucket list person that's coming in trying to write? Because this person has like no.
Yeah. No frame of reference.
No frame of reference. So. It seems like.
You know, I don't know. We have to
mold them into your own image.
Well, that's the thing is I tell them the way that the class is structured, the way I do it is they actually have to write a minute of stand up before I ever give them any real instruction, like about like this is different ways that you write jokes and things like that. And the reason why is because it's not the Madelon Martin School of Comedy, how they do comedy like me. It's like they inherently know what is funny, and then you just kind of help make it better. That's the way I approach teaching it, right? Like, I don't write jokes for people. I don't tell them like, this is the type of joke, you know. It's like, no, go write some jokes. Like, you know, you know jokes. And I just made you watch 3 hours of clips of the history of stand-up, you know? And so I just soaked your brain. No, this is a woman like in her 40s probably that said that, the TikTok lady. And she did. She seemed really super into it. And, you know, and I watched them to see how they're reacting, right? Like which clips like everybody's laughing at, which ones they're not laughing at and stuff like that.
Right.
And so, you know, I just soaked their brain with, you know, 70 years of comedy knowledge, you know, little samplings of all these different styles of comedy over the years, and then go send them off and then they have to come back and write their, you know, they perform their 1 minute of jokes. And then we start getting into like, okay, this is how misdirection works. This is a set, you know, I could do all that kind of stuff. Because no, I don't want to mold anybody because like, that's just like not that interesting to me, you know, also, you know, like, and I do my best to help people and put them on the right path. And like, you know, but I'm very strict about not giving people tags, not like I will fix a joke a little bit. I'll be like, okay, this is making more sense like this, but I'm not going to rewrite a joke for somebody, you know?
Right. Is there,
because at the end of the day, it's on them, you know?
Yeah. That's the, I mean, rule of comedy. Yeah. So you started teaching this class before like the big social media influx of like posting clips. Does that change how you're approaching this class? Like, are you putting anything in there that's like, hey, don't steal material, even if it's from a lesser known comic, or like, don't go to meme accounts and don't fucking do all these terrible things that comics do.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's covered, and that's just an adaptation of the, you know, one of the rules, which is like, you know, the class is essentially a writing class, and, you know, I was like, yes, you're performing as well, but stand up at its core is about writing, you know, performing, yes, later on, but when you're first starting off, figuring out how to write a joke is the most important thing, right?
Right.
Then you can get better performing after that. And so in that is covered with like, you have to do your own work. You can't come in here and do street jokes. You can't do a joke that your buddy told you at work. You can't do a joke from a joke book or the internet. So I do cover all that kind of stuff. But maybe I need to also cover like, you know, this also means any viral video you saw, you know, things like that. I don't know. I might have to just start adapting it. But it's always interesting, man. Like, and this, another opposite end of the spectrum, there's a guy in my class that brought two books about comedy with him.
Okay.
To the class, and it's like what's the real famous one, like the
Comedy Bible,
the Comedy Bible by Judy something or whatever.
Yeah,
So he had that one and another book, And I found out that he's just a couple months ago took another stand-up class at a different place.
Oh, he's trying to do this.
Well, yeah, he's serious. But he was like, I want to be as prepared as I can possibly be before doing an open mic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, cool, I get that. I understand that some people really, really want to have that structure and the safety. But also in the back of my head, I was like, you just go do it. It's like you already went through one class. Like at some point you're going to have to rip off the Band-Aid and go just do this. It. You're going to have to go. But I've also had people take the class several times in several years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Who have zero interest in doing an open mic because they've gone to an open mic and they're like, fuck that. Like yeah. They just literally are like, yeah, there's like 40 comics and it goes on for 3 hours long and it's just a meat grinder. And so they're just like, it's enough of a scratching that itch.
Right.
For them once a year to come take the class again, write 5 new minutes and perform in front of like a very supportive, loving crowd, which is how the Comedy Graduation Show is, right?
Right.
They're very supportive of everybody there. And it's like, all right, man, it's your money. If that's what you want this to is do. A, like,
yo, yeah. Listen, nobody knows why any of us do this dumb thing, that's why true. We got into it. I always like people make fun of people that take comedy classes, but I actually appreciate that level of like foresight and self knowledge of knowing like maybe I should learn how to like, I don't know, the basics, the mechanics of this. Versus mm-hmm. what I did, which is just get on stage and run around like in an Eddie Murphy voice. It's like, mm-hmm. see, I'm doing it, yeah. Just learning the hard way. But there is like, eventually just, you got to get on stage and you got to fail.
Yeah. And that's the thing with the guy who brought the two books is a younger guy. Right. And I'm assuming he also like listens to all the comedy podcasts and it's like, he seems like he's, you know, super into stand up mm-hmm. and there it is gonna and that's gonna be my, you know, at the end of the class I'm gonna tell him like after graduation you're like stop taking classes,
yeah,
just go do it, like is... and just know it's gonna suck, open mics are gonna suck for a while, but the doing a shitty open mic is very important early on.
Yeah,
you know, we've talked about it before on this podcast. I think there's you reach a point as a comic where they do more damage than they help.
Mm-hmm.
But early on going and being in that meat grinder and figuring it out how to do well in those situations or at least do okay is an important skill. And,
yeah.
This is the advice I will impart to this guy. Unless he's just real terrible. Unless he's real terrible, in which case I'm not going to say shit. I'm just going to be like, hey, man, thanks for taking the class. And then that's going to be it, you know.
Oh, man.
We'll have to see, like, how his jokes are, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I assume if he's trying to take all this stuff in, he's just got to get on stage because that's the thing. It's like, the overthinking aspect when you're very new is actually beneficial, I think. Like, do it while you have a ton of energy and while you're mm-hmm. like all about it. Like, he's currently obsessed. That's the best time to like hone your own stage presence. Like, yes. this is wasted time. That energy, yeah. That love, that doesn't last forever.
Yeah, no, I tell people all the time, like, you have to be obsessed with it. Like early on, it has to be kind of like a sickness. Like it has to be like a thing you have to go do. You have to go do it because that's what carries you through sitting through a 3-hour open mic to do, you know, 3 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever, or driving a couple hours away to do 5 or 10 minutes on a show and not make any money. Like you have to have that level of obsession and kind of sickness to you to get good and to get, you know, because like the early years of stand-up are very rough, you know. Go ahead.
Yeah. They're fine if you're they suck when you reflect back on them in a way that's like, I'm never going through that shit again. Sort of like a hazing. But in the moment, everybody at that open mic or a lot of people at that open mic are going through the exact same thing.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
So it's a little bit bonding versus where we are, which are jaded and angry. I go, no, goddamn open mic, this sucks.
But I'm more like jaded than sad, but okay, that's all right. That's how you could tell us apart. Dwight.
Yeah, I'm angry. You know me. Oh, angry, angry Dwight. But man, I think it's, do you find it helps your outlook for a little while after you teach the class, or does it not affect you? Like, is it like a positive boost in helping people see like the beauty that is yeah, the history of stand-up comedy.
I genuinely do enjoy teaching the class. I've always enjoyed teaching. Like, I taught when I lived in Korea. Like, there's something about it that I do like, you know. And teaching is very hard, no matter what it is. It's a big time, you know, commitment, no matter what you're teaching. And so, I mean, I occasionally have students that I fucking hate or that are annoying or whatever. But for the most part, it's usually a good group of people. There is, even just in the 1 month of the class, there is a sort of bonding that happens between them because they're all trying to do this crazy thing. They're taking this comedy class together, and that's kind of fun to see. And I do enjoy it. I thought it would, you know, because I've been teaching this class for 10 years because, you know, we had to start it 11 years, I guess, because basically the whole thing started because we were trying to get a free venue for Limestone.
Yeah.
From Ivy Tech. And they made me create a class for them, you know, and then Carmel came along and decided to actually pay me for it. And so I was like, okay, I'll go to Carmel. That's fine. And like Ivy Tech, we just basically, we got a free room to use for Limestone. And so I do enjoy it. I really thought it was going to, I could utilize it more like, all right, I'm going to also write Fresh Five. I'm going to do the same thing that the students are doing. And I just think I am just too jaded and too in my own process that I know if I try to force something written, it's never good. It's never good anymore. Now, when I was young and hungry and starting off, but also I had a million ideas that I hadn't explored yet.
Right.
Whereas now, you know, three albums out and things like that, I've talked about myself a lot at this point. And so it has to feel particularly inspired or come to me. I heard an interview with John Mellencamp on NPR and with Terry Gross. And it was interesting because she actually asked him about, you know, you're concerned, you know, you're in the Songwriters Hall of Fame and, you know, you're known to be this great songwriter. Like, do you labor over songs? He's like, no. He's like, if I have to labor over a song, it's not going to be good.
Yeah.
Like, a song has to come to me. And he's like, and sometimes it comes in bits. Like, I'll have like a couple lines like that just come to me. He's like, oh, that's a good line. And I don't know what to do with it for years.
Yeah.
He's like, but when a song arrives fully formed from my subconscious or from, you know, the muses or whatever, he's like, those are always the best songs. He's like, when I sit down and try to write a song, it's never very good.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how I feel about comedy now. Like, I have to have at least the basic structure and idea of where it goes and where it ends. Or else, like, if I try to, like, oh, what's it? Okay, I really need to write something about the student debt relief program not working. You
know? Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah, that makes sense.
I could force myself to write a joke about it, but I won't give a fuck. That's the real thing. It's like, if I force myself to write a joke like that, then I don't care. And then it's not particularly good. Whereas if it comes to me, it's like, okay, I care about this. So. Yeah. This is my long-winded excuse of saying why I expect more from my students than myself.
Hell yeah. No, continue, please.
I was going to just say, I hear you too. Like, there's a lot of people that do like kind of, like, you know, like look down on comedy classes and or people who take comedy classes. But I always, man, Dave Waite took a comedy class and he always said he never in a million years would have just gone to an open mic and done it had he not taken the comedy class first.
Yeah.
And he's a great comedian.
He is.
He's an absolutely great comedian. Shanda Sung took my comedy class. She's probably my brightest pupil or whatever, like as far as who's done the most. She just recorded her first hour, you know, first album and everything like that. She also was like, I don't think I would have done this had not done it for a class. So,
right.
You know,
makes sense.
And we're gonna end with those two examples and not bring up all the crazy stuff people that have been unleashed upon comedy scenes because they took a comedy class.
I thought you were getting into some Diddy right there. He's like, I'm responsible for Mace. I got it's like dropping all the people he produced.
Do you think Diddy is still leading with Mace? Do you think that's the example Diddy's off with?
He can't lead with Danity Kane or any of the shows that he had making the band seasons. He's leading with Pastor Mace.
I guess.
Take that.
Yeah.
But man, I dig that. I'm in a force phase right now where it feels like I'm force writing and I'm enjoying it. I think I shit on my job at Bob and Tom a lot, but it does help in writing for topics or writing or like adding tags to stuff. Like when I'm just over something, it does help me like forced to explore a little bit more to see if something's there, which I'm in like a crazy free write stage right now. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I've ever written like this where I'm writing a ton down, but not necessarily using much of it on stage, but also not like discarding it. I'm like, I don't know. It's like a boxer jabbing, trying to figure out where the weak spots are on these like longer, more personal bits, I guess, with like no, with like no structure or set. So like on Can-Can, I did 10 minutes. There's no real good way to get in to talking about my dad getting stabbed when I was younger outside of just getting into it, outside of just saying it. I don't know what the larger, I don't know what the ending of the joke is. I don't know what the, like, if there is even a larger thing there, but just playing around with it is requiring a lot of thought and effort. And that's what I mean by like force writing, because like you said, if you don't care about it, this is something that I do care about, but I think the way that I typically build sets is more structured, where like, okay, get in and out of this bit. Don't just let it die on the table with like a chuckle of laughs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm enjoying doing spots locally that are low stakes, that I can actually feel empowered to play around with. I know Sagatuck isn't local, but it's as low stakes as it gets.
Right. But, yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's where I am right now for like the next month.
Well, I think it's great. And you know, we've talked before about this too on here, like, you know, this is a area that I can improve on for sure. You know, just because we do this for a long time, we still have you're very good about staying motivated and goal setting, you know, and things like that. And you are in the beginning process of a new hour because you just recorded your special not that long ago, a couple months ago. Yeah. And so I just need to get that Dwight Simmons energy. You know, I need to start going to the gym again. I need to, like, you know, start writing instead of just like waiting for something to fall on my fucking lap. It's kind of it's been for a while, so, you know? Funny.
You know what? I've been going to the gym a lot, and I called myself out for using it as an excuse to not write like during the day. Like, I'll write in the morning, but I'm like, I really got to like buckle down on this bit. And last Wednesday, I should have like spent another couple hours, but I went to the gym. Yeah. It's not like I went, like, there are worse things you can do, but it's
exactly.
Like,
I don't think this is a bad thing.
I did procrastinate in a way that's, I think we all want to write more. So like when you have like a bunch of stuff that's just unfinished, you feel like you're always behind. And like every, I hope I'm getting better about this. Like every hour or day that you take not doing that is a day wasted, but I hope I'm getting better about not, you know, being that much of a crazy person, like trying to prove something to yourself the whole time. I don't know.
Well, I think also, first of all, I think going to the gym is the best possible procrastination thing you could do. I can't think of anything. I mean,
you heard it here first.
Build a deck. I mean, you could do something like that. You know, like,
build a deck.
I guess there are like home projects which could also be very helpful. But I think also this might be the solution to your bit. Like, so keep going to the gym and then keep working on this bit about your father getting stabbed. And then at the end, you just show off your abs for no reason. And then that's the end of the bit. That's the ending of the bit. It's just like
a billion views.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm also going to the gym because Megan's always on the PlayStation now, so I can't do that. But yeah, I feel good. I am panicking about my fall because it's pretty light. I have the special comes out July 20th on YouTube. That's in a couple of weeks. So I saw the first cuts of it. Looks really good between both shows, I think. It was funny because I think in the second show, there were bigger pops where the first show was better overall. The second show had bigger pops in some of the more politically charged bits, which I thought was interesting. Whereas like the family and getting married and stuff like that just really hit hard in the in the first show. Also in the first show, watching these edits, you hosted. You remember the first show, the crazy black lady? There's,
yeah.
I'm going into, so she had to get, she, I think she either left on her own or was asked to leave. But if you're just watching this cut, it's like, I go into a bit about how they teach black history and she gets up and walks out. So it looks like I walked her on this very charged bit. It's very funny.
Yeah.
It's very, so I think I gotta, I think they're gonna like, also it may not be a thing that the audience notices. They use like a different angle or something, but I think they're gonna use the intro of that bit from the second show because no one walks out.
Yeah, that's important. Yeah.
Yeah. Not to walk.
I can't wait to see it, man. I think speak for all of our listeners that we're excited to see this thing. I mean, I was there the night that you taped and you smashed both shows, so it should be great. It doesn't surprise me though that sort of more traditional, like or as the kids call it, trad bits about being married and everything popped more on the early show, because I mean, early show you typically have older people, married people, stuff like that, and the political stuff hitting harder in the late show makes sense because that's the younger people who you know, 9-15 is the when they start to go out, you know. So that makes sense, and it's good that you got both good reactions on both that you can edit between is great.
Yeah, so I'm happy with it. I appreciate you saying that. It was, there's also, I don't know, watching, you see everything. So like the first show, there's the crowd's hot, but like there's an angle, where it's shooting kind of left up at the stage. So you can see those chairs that sit by the bathroom, and there's this couple that just like, they're enjoying themselves, but just fucking like resting TikTok face. Like they're younger and they're just like, he's like eating his nachos and he's like nodding, but there's not a damn smile on this dude's face. And I'm like, what the fuck is your problem, bro? I want to reach the screen. I was like, the crowd is perfect outside of him and the, it was like, those were the two extremes. It was him and then the overhyped lady that got kicked out.
Yeah, and she left herself because she left, if I recall correctly, she left because her husband told her to shut the fuck up, essentially, at one point. She he finally was like, and so then she got pissed off at him and left. And then she had to deal with, like, she had to complain for a while and all that kind of stuff outside, you know, in the stairwell and everything. Yeah, it is interesting. I had a friend send me the rough cut of their special. And I was one of many people that they said to, like, hey, just give me any notes or whatever. And it was really interesting because they had taped it in a venue where it's like a theater kind of space, like a smaller, like indie theater. And because it's a theater, there's like the front row is like, I don't know, 15 feet from the stage.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
And so anytime they would go to the big shot where you saw, I'm just knocking my mic over, trying to talk with my hands here.
Literally drop the mic.
Whenever they would go to the shot of the where like you could see the performer on stage and then the full room, right? You see this huge gap between them, and the room is full. Like they did a great job of packing out this like small theater on a couple hundred people probably in there.
Yeah,
but to me it was just like, you know, and I doubt anyone else will think it's weird besides maybe comedians. Like, in the same way that no average person watching your special is going to even notice that couple that's not laughing.
Right.
But like, it, to me, immediately it was just like, oh, that's kind of an odd, I don't know if I would ever use that shot.
Yeah.
Right. Like have audience reactions where you're crushing and then back to you on stage. Like we don't need to see the entire space.
The big thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe because just again, at like the beginning. So you know that it's a theater, but like not.
Yeah.
Intermixed
or edit it so like you see that it's a big theater seating, but not you don't see them on stage. I don't know. I just thought it was that was interesting, you know.
Weirdly shot. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think they shot it. I know it looked great. It looks great. It's just I think that they were kind of trying to edit it in the way that, you know, made sense and they aren't thinking of it like a comic because we always you know, we always focus on that shit, you know.
Yep. It's like you're supposed to be watching your set. I'm like making eye daggers at this dude that I don't know that bought a ticket to my show and was probably very nice.
Yeah. Probably loved it. Probably bought some merch afterwards.
Yep. Probably like Yeah, it's like, fuck you, man. But I'm excited for that. So you're closing out the contest, you said, this week?
Yeah, so this week. So
best shows of the year.
It should be fun. We'll have a good time. Yeah, that's pretty much all I got going on. I've got that going on this week. And then we do have the first Don't Tell of the summer here in Bloomington on the 20th. I'll be hosting that as well. You were talking about your fall. My rest of my year is just real up in the air. Like, I stopped booking anything once my family member had this emergency. And So I might not be doing that much comedy. I'm going to try and do everything that I still had on the books, but it's real hit or miss. We'll see. This podcast might become a lot more about Sheryl Crow and a lot less about comedy. As we go.
All I want to do is have some fun. So
I know,
I'm down for it. I've got some stuff coming up. I'm at the White Rabbit the day this comes out, July 12th, doing vocab, an absolutely wonderful variety show with poetry and music and comedy. And then on the 13th, I'm at Penrose on Mass Avenue in Indianapolis. I think it's early. It's like a 5:30, 6 o'clock show. So I will probably do that and then go to World of Beer to see what they have on tap. Looking forward to it. And then I do want to plug 17th. I'm at Union Brewing in Carmel. And then my special comes out July 20th. Wherever you are, please, please watch it. We will be talking about it probably a lot for the next couple of weeks. So it's called Who's the Master? I'm really excited about it. So stay tuned for the link. And that's what I got.
Right on. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of the podcast. As you may have noticed, we did not answer a question today, because we had a lot of catching up to do. It's been a couple of weeks since we've talked to each other. And also, B, we are out of questions. So if you would like to help us out and send us any questions you have about comedy, about Dwight's gym routine, about the wonderful, talented Sheryl Crow, you can do that at our Gmail account, which is Matt and Dwight. That is MattAndDwight@gmail.com. We would love to get some more questions in. It's always fun for us to kind of take your suggestions and the things that you're thinking about with comedy and put our own spins on it and makes us think a bit too, and often in ways that we're not really prepared to. People pop some questions, we're like, oh, that's a good question.
Oh damn, I probably should have prepared to answer this. Should I have some notes?
Drop us an email with a question, or if you just want to let us know that you're digging the podcast, you can do that. You can subscribe, rate, review, all that kind of good stuff that they say. We hardly ever say that on this podcast, but every once in a blue moon, maybe we'll remind you that those are good things too.
Yeah.
Like, rate, review, subscribe.
And, soak up the sun. Soak up the sun. Do it all. Thanks, guys.